Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. Paul to you. I'm happy to be with you. It's another beautiful day in my consciousness. And I am here with my buddies, my co-hosts, my ministers, my confidants, you name it, friends. Hi, guys.
Hey, how are you this morning? This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton.
And this is Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. And it is very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness. And
it's a beautiful day in my consciousness as well.
And hooray for us.
Yay.
And we are the co-founders of an online ministry now called the Unity Center for Universal, youuniversalprosperity.com.
And you can get there by ucfyp.com. Makes it very easy to get there. And you can find our products. And we are currently, this is a little sneak peek, we are working on an entirely new website just for our product mall.
Wonderful.
Yes.
We got to have some place to put them.
Yep. And keeping it very simple, everything related to that will be in one site. And it is coming soon. But right now you can go to yourspiritualpractice.com. And that may or may not work. You might want to just go to theglobalcenterforspiritualawakening.com. I know that one works. Things are a little messed up right now.
Woo!
Yeah, that's why we're making it simple. We're going to
make it as simple. Yes.
Yeah.
And I have paulhasselbeck.com, my website.
Very simple.
Where you find the absolute word. And you can also find my calendar of when I'm doing Zoom events around the country. In the Zoomiverse, right?
The Zoomiverse.
Yes. In the Zoomiverse. Okay. And so we are on part three of a multi-part series. We're not declaring how long, but we are on part three. And it's based on a white paper, a white light paper, named Free Will or Free Woke. It was written by Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, our wonderful co-host. And of course, Cher always has her hand in it. She's she always like mix and stir together. So are you guys ready to get romping?
Yes, we are.
All right.
We are ready. We are going to pick up in the article and we're sharing it. And once it's designed and laid out and up for sale, we'll have it posted on the website as well. But right now it's still, this is a great chance to get a preview of what's coming with it.
You know what? I just had a thought. Bill, can you just give a little thumbnail? Maybe we need to do a thumbnail introduction for anyone listening to this, to our program for the first time. So, and on this series. So what is this paper about in a big picture?
Premises, asking a question, essentially, do we have free will? Or don't we have free will? Is the free will influenced by subconscious patterns and tendencies, or is it prohibited by outside influences, even inside influences that negate our free will? And the research is sort of out on that. You'll get both sides in this paper, of course, some more believable than others. And you'll also get my opinion, what I feel about free will and what it is and when it happens and whether or not we have free will. The title, of course, of the paper also involves free won't, and we talk about what that means too. So I think you guys will have some enlightening information, and then you can decide for yourself which of the neuroscientists you believe.
There you go. Okay, so let's get going, Cher.
All right. And I just want to add that a lot of what we believe about free will has been influenced by the discussion the three of us have had, because the three of us have had some very spirited discussions about free will and what that really means.
True.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
So I just like to throw that in. Okay. So we are going to pick up where we left off last week. And we wanted to talk about, according to Jung, who is one of our, Carl Jung is one of our favorite psychologists who's done a lot of research in the area. According to Jung, the human mind has innate characteristics imprinted on it as a result of evolution, which impact our worldview and choices. So that's an important part. I just want to, as an aside, that these characteristics were imprinted, and it's because of the influence of our worldview and choices that we've made. He goes on to say, these universal predispositions stem from our ancestral past. Fear of the dark or snakes and spiders might be examples. And it's interesting that this idea has recently been revived in the theory of prepared conditioning. For Jung, our primitive past becomes the basis of the human psyche, directing and influencing present behavior.
Yeah, wow. So there is a big influence right there, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And by the way, that research comes from Martin Seligman, who is a founder of about 10 years ago now of positive psychology. So he was quoting Jung.
Oh, wow. So he is a great source.
Yes. Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
And has a great way of taking research and sharing it in a way you can understand.
And that's important.
That is important. Yeah, because sometimes it's hard to read research. So I think the important takeaway from that paragraph for me is that a lot of the things that affect our choices are things that have been kind of built in and influence us, and we may not even be aware of that influence. Like, why are we afraid of snakes?
Yeah.
Why are we afraid of spiders? And our conscious mind knows, I mean, from a facts point of view, we know that's a black snake. I don't have to be afraid of it. It's here. It's actually doing good things. But still, when I see one slither in front of me, I'm afraid for a moment. And even though we know it consciously, there's an innate reaction, emotional reaction that happens.
And then I wonder why there are people who love snakes and love spiders and and live with them.
Right.
Yes.
Embrace the study of them. And
right. It's an amazing thing. So that's like a free won't, right?
Yeah, right.
True.
And you do wonder, because haven't they been influenced by some of the same things as, you know, from our past that we have, but maybe not.
Maybe not.
We don't know. And maybe that affects that whole choice pattern, which is interesting.
Yeah, many people believe that we have free will because we're not, as they see it, influenced by outside factors, the society or the people we hang around with, or conditions that happen. But that doesn't mean that our choices that we make, and we do make those choices, but it doesn't mean those choices are not influenced by something inside of us.
So moving on, we're going to move down to where neuroscientists tell us that there's a time delay in the time it takes information out in the world to reach our conscious awareness, a nanosecond delay. And because our conscious awareness lags slightly behind, it could be up to 7 seconds, what happens is our subconscious has already encoded what happened, including its consequences, and compels us to respond in a certain way based on our past patterns and conditioning. I don't know. Does that make sense, everybody?
It does make sense. It means the information gets in, but our conscious awareness of it is delayed by 7 seconds, and our subconsciousness is processing that. We're unconscious, I should say, maybe, of the processing that's going on around that information.
Yep. And it's a good thing that we've got that kind of processing, because that processing is based on a lot of information that it compiles, like billions of bits of information, it compiles in a matter of less than 7 seconds.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Wow.
Quite a little computer there.
Yeah.
My thought is, and I'm not sure what all the scientists say about this, but I'm wondering, if our perceptions of things are inaccurate, how does that affect that subconscious decision-making that's occurring before we make our actual choices? Like if we have biases, for example, that's going to impact how we see things, which will impact, again, that influence how we choose to interpret it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's getting to here. I mean, we have these preconceived notions. A lot of them we're not conscious of, we're unconscious of them. You could say they're in the subconscious phase of mind, and they're well and healthy and operating and impacting us in ways of which we're not aware until, ta-da, we are aware.
Right. Yeah. Just like that.
And one of the functions of our subconsciousness is that it's trying to keep us out of trouble so that we will continue to survive in the environment that we're in.
Yeah, and survival is all about what I call the prime directive. Remember from Star Trek, there was a prime. Well, I think all living beings have a prime directive to reproduce yourself.
That's
the prime directive. And so survive. If you don't survive, you can't fulfill the prime directive. So they're really connected in interesting ways.
Exactly. Yep, that's how
that's what keeps us from going extinct.
Hopefully,
Hopefully.
Okay, well, we're looking next at a 2008 study, and what Bill has done here is combined or compiled a lot of different research related to this topic, so we can see the different aspects of what researchers are looking at and how they're changing and still questioning. Yep. And this next paragraph will tell us how even when they make findings, they're still questioning it.
Yep.
This was a 2008 study by scientists from the Max Planck Institute for Human Cognitive and Brain Sciences in Leipzig, in collaboration with the Charité University Hospital and the Bernstein Center for Computational Neuroscience in Berlin, and also researchers from the Professor John Dylan Haynes. So you can see there's a lot of different research groups involved in this. So there's a lot of stuff going on. They used a brain scanner to investigate what happens in the human brain just before a decision is made. Now, again, we're talking the brain, which we believe is separate from consciousness. Yeah. They say, and this is a quote, "Many processes in the subconscious brain occur automatically and without involvement of our consciousness. This prevents our mind from being overloaded by simple routine tasks. But when it comes to decisions, we tend to assume they are made by our conscious mind. This is questioned by our current findings. The researchers found that it was possible to predict from subconscious brain signals which option participants would take up to 7 seconds before they consciously made their decision." This is getting disturbing to me. This really bothers me a little, but you know, it's what the research says, so we need to look at it and ask ourselves, what does it mean?
Yeah.
Okay, back to the reading. "Normally, researchers look at what happens when the decision is made, but not at what happens several seconds before. The fact that decisions can be predicted so long before they are made is an astonishing finding." And 7 seconds, that's a long time.
That's a long time.
Yeah. "Micro patterns of activity in the frontal cortex were predictive of the choices even before participants knew which option they were going to choose."
Wow. So you know what I think we're going to do? We're going to do a 7 second silence so people get a feel for what that's like. And then I want you to read those last two sentences, okay? Here we go. We're starting. This is what 7 seconds is. Now, wasn't that a pretty long time when you think about it?
Wow. It is. For silence, it's an incredibly long time.
Especially when doing a radio program.
People who just tuned in think that there's something wrong, right? "The fact that decisions can be predicted that long, what we just demonstrated with the silence, the fact that decisions can be predicted so long before they are made is an astonishing finding. Micro patterns of activity in the frontopolar cortex were predictive of the choices even before participants knew which option they were going to choose."
How does this relate to that 0.35 second thing in the Birchhoff's potential? Because this is saying 7 seconds now.
Mm-hmm. And there's interesting too that you say that, Paul, because there's also research, I think it's in this paper, maybe not, where it's even given us from 7 to 10 seconds, an additional 3 seconds. So they're continuing to investigate that. I think Barrett's just gave us a good start on this and at least got people aware that there's something going on here before we actually make a decision. And a third of a second is the data they come up with. And that's been challenged, but it's also been replicated a few times. And then you've got folks here saying up to 7, and I think later we'll see up to 10 seconds.
So, wow.
Yeah, they're still investigating this.
I do like, too, the idea that we need this at some level because of those simple routine tasks. I mean, if we had to analyze oh, I'm going to brush my teeth now. How do I do that? How do I choose to take this toothbrush? We just do it automatically, and we need that or we go nuts, right?
So I'm going to read the quote, and then I'm going to change the wording because I think the quote as it is kind of misleads. Says, many processes in the subconscious brain occur automatically and without involvement of our conscious awareness.
That would be a better way to say it.
Okay. Uh-huh. This prevents our conscious awareness from being overloaded by simple routine tasks.
Mm-hmm.
That's clear.
Yes.
Because what it says is, many processes in the subconscious brain occur automatically without involvement of our consciousness. This prevents our mind from being overloaded by simple routine tasks.
Mm-hmm.
By using words like consciousness, subconscious brain, and mind, it misleads
it does.
And we lose the precision to really understand what it's saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, they should hire you, Paul. That group that I just read, all those people, they should bring you on to review their research writing.
Yeah, I am the what happens in vagueness stays in vagueness.
Yeah, yes, you are.
And imprecision leads to vagueness. So
yeah, I like that clarity.
Well, and it's interesting too, because I know our students and your students too, Paul, with our writings, sometimes our written sentences tend to be elongated. But I think what you just brought up is a very apropos point to why we do that.
Yes.
It does add more clarity to the understanding.
Yes. And so there's a bias in the writing world to not use the same word repetitiously.
Mm.
And sometimes using the same word repetitiously creates more precision.
Yeah, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Better understanding for sure.
Yeah. Good point.
I guess the takeaway from this section, what would be the takeaway from this section? It's the 7 seconds is a new amount that we're looking at. And it's still saying, again, our decisions are influenced.
So there isn't, I don't think there's a practical takeaway on how I can use this in my everyday life, except to be aware that my conscious, what appears to be my conscious decisions are often made 7 seconds prior to my awareness of them.
Yep.
So would going back to the deep, taking that deep breath before you make powerful decisions, just allow yourself the time, because that 7 second pre-decision may not be the real decision you want to make. And so recognizing that, maybe giving yourself more time before you consciously express your decision. I wonder if you
can mention there's that. And on the other side of the coin is not doing something based on your decision till you've had a chance to reflect on what that decision is.
Yep.
And so that's the counting to 10.
That's mm-hmm. I think that's what I was trying to say. Yep. Yeah, I missed okay. not to express yep.
and,
it well.
And we've just demonstrated, thanks to Paul, how long 7 seconds is. So you've got plenty of time
right.
to think about this and if you will, question your subconsciousness, essentially, because that's all set patterns, it's already there. Knowing that our decisions now are being influenced by the past programming, it gives us 7 seconds to think about whether or not we want to question the unquestioned answers in our past programming.
And questioning decisions when they come into our awareness.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, makes sense.
Because I'm thinking people could use this research. Oh, I already made, my decision was already made to eat that chocolate.
Yeah, you know? So in a previous program, you said you've done that.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
You've played with Bill a bit, really, haven't you? I'm eating this because my mind said I should.
Right, mind. Yeah, we've played, ever since we read this, especially, we've been saying that.
So it begs the question, the legal question, are you innocent until you're proven guilty?
Well, there's a whole
thing.
Perhaps you're guilty until you're proven innocent.
Right. So this gets so warped, Bill, that you become aware of a decision and then you decide to challenge that decision. Was it my subconscious mind who made that decision?
Right.
right?
So. Yeah, that was made the next 7 seconds, you know? Right. It's like my decisions go way back. Yeah, it can really get convoluted.
It does very quickly in my mind.
Well, and that whole phrase of I had no choice, which we just abhor that phrase, yeah, I have no choice.
I have no choice.
I don't like that. I just want to scream, yes, you do. Now I'm looking at this saying, well.
Well, so we do. So I think that's a thing that we've got to be aware of. Is that while I might not have the conscious free will that I thought I had, it still is me, my subconscious programming, and that's still me influencing my conscious awareness.
Right. Mm-hmm. And as I change, as I open up my awareness, as I grow in my experience, that's in question all my answers, that's got to influence the decisions that I'm making, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the data bank, our subconscious mind is in the process of continuing to be updated.
Yes, all the time. Oh, that's a powerful takeaway in my opinion. Yep. That's big.
Which really suggests to us then to be careful in your daily living to upgrade your thoughts. Sharon and I call it upping your consciousness, because whatever the data is in our subconsciousness is the data we put in there.
Yeah, and so there's a new word for that I've been noticing in our lexicon. Up-leveling our consciousness.
Up-level, yes, yeah.
Have you heard that, up-level?
Yes.
Yeah.
That kind of a new catchphrase. Mm-hmm. Sure, where are we time-wise? Oh my gosh.
We are ready to wrap.
Time to pivot.
Our subconscious just said, you know, they should have told us 7 seconds ago.
I just got a prompt on that. We're grateful for that. The absolute word is based on Sunday messages appearing in Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And this comes from Sunday, July 5th, 2020, and the word is comfort. And my affirmation is, my innate divinity is my comfort. My innate divinity is my comfort. I sometimes move out of my comfort zone in response to my life experiences. The first day at a new school, starting or leaving a job, a new phase in a relationship, retiring from a career, the passing of a loved one. My response to any change may range from mild discomfort to even grief. My innate divinity consists of the universal principles of life, love, wisdom, and much more. They are my constant resource for comfort through all of life's changes. I find assurance that, although life's physical expression may change, it can never end. I know oneness and love with all who have been dear to me. Recognizing my divine nature, I know there is no loss, change, or circumstance that can limit me. I find comfort in this deep knowing. My innate divinity is my comfort. And so it is. And thank you, listeners. Thank you, Bill and Cher. This is Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck signing off. Goodbye for now.
Bye.
Ciao.